Well, hey, everyone. For this week's culture segment, I am very privileged to have on the phone Andy Stanley. Andy, welcome.
Hey, Lisa. Thanks for letting me be on the program.
Well, this is really, really fun and really a privilege. Obviously, I and many in our audience have seen you speak before, have heard you, have read your books, are familiar with your dad. I mean, you're kind of you kind of have been on our radar for a long time, and especially through conferences like Catalyst and some of the other things that you've done now with the world of podcasting and some of your series that have been widely distributed. We kind of know what you're about a little bit, but for those who don't, I want to let folks know that Andy Stanley is a pastor. He's actually the founder of North Point Ministries out there in Georgia, since around the mid-90s, right?
Yeah, it was started in 1995, actually.
Okay, 95, and not only one campus anymore, there, North Point Church. You now have five in the Atlanta area and a number of others elsewhere, including here in Colorado Springs.
Yep.
We have a plant here, so very excited to have you represented locally. But you've written books and you have been involved really in a lot of areas of ministry, including leadership as well as the pastoring of the church there. You are married and have kids, and really, I think are passionate about this generation and about leadership of this generation, and really moving millennials and Xers towards maturity and certainly being able to share some of your own story in that process. And so really privileged to have you with us.
Yeah, well, you know, it's so funny because my stage of life has even shifted me to a place where I'm even more interested in this. My oldest son's 19, started college at Auburn University. My next child is 18, is about to graduate from high school this year, and then my daughter's 15. So, you know, for a while I had my own youth group. Now I've got my own youth group in college ministry. So I'm very, very interested in the stuff we're going to talk about.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And it is, you know, it's quite a perspective changer from parents of young adults that I've talked to, because they're like, well, you know, it's one thing when the kids are at home and I know what they're doing and I'm locked on, you know, got the cell phone connection there, whatever. But you release them to college and beyond. And it's really, that's when parents have to say, you know, what have I done as a parent? And has it been, quote, enough? And really, do I trust God enough to release them to the university world, to a church, to ultimately marriage? And I think it can be a scary thing for parents.
It is scary. And you find out, just like you said, Lisa, you find out kind of what kind of job you've done and as you watch them make those choices. But hey, for us, it's been a lot of fun. I know a lot of parents who just couldn't stand raising adolescents. And we just have a blast at our house. And I think part of it is none of us take ourselves too seriously. And that just makes life a lot easier.
Yeah, that's good. It's always a good place to start. And really, I can even look on my own experience with my parents. And my parents were a good deal older. I'm the youngest of six. And just recognizing that for them to be who they were at home, have that be the same as who they were, whether in church or in the workplace, made such a difference for me. And I still think of that, of just, you know, it's not that they were perfect, but at least they were real. And that's really, I think, a major component for me as to why I chose to continue my relationship with Jesus Christ and say, this is the real deal. And it's something that I'm going to buy into myself and not just because I grew up in the church. So well, cool. Well, you are, you're going to talk to us a little bit here today about the subject of a book that you have written. It's Enemies of the Heart. Some folks maybe knew it as It Came From Within, but it's now re-released. And you're really talking about emotions in this book, and not only emotions, but controlling emotions. And this is something, you know, this is funny because when we talk about this kind of thing with young adults, you know, I think it's easy for us to point the finger and we'll say, you know, well, I'm this way because either this is my personality or this is how I was raised or this is whatever. This is my parents, someone else's problem. We don't want it to be our problem. But then there's this thing called sin. And so I guess we have to eventually come to grips with that. And I just want to talk a little bit about this, because really what you say is the subtitle on this is Breaking Free from the Four Emotions That Control You. And what would you say, Andy, like why did you think that a book like this even had to be written in the first place?
Well, you know, Lisa, we grew up in a culture that teaches us how to monitor our behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's in dating relationships and our friendships, it's all about, you know, do the right thing. Don't say this. Don't say that. How do I act in these situations? And so we become experts at monitoring our behavior. No one ever teaches us to monitor our hearts. And Jesus actually said that our behaviors, even our words, and he spoke in very extreme terms. He said our behaviors and our words come from our heart. So if you never learn to monitor your heart, if all you do is monitor your behavior, you can get into relationships. In fact, we see it all the time. People get into marriage relationships or they move in with a partner and they like each other's behavior, but because they are in a relationship with someone who has never learned to monitor their heart, suddenly the behavior changes, suddenly the words change, and they say, where in the world did that come from? You know, that's not the person I dated. That's not the person I, you know, wanted to spend the rest of my life with. And it's because no one teaches us to monitor our hearts. So I wrote this book to a great extent because of some things I learned actually with my children and some skills that I wanted them to learn early on. And then as I began to talk to adults about this, they looked at me and said, how come no one has ever told me this before? And so this is a book about learning to monitor our hearts and deal with things at a heart level so that our behaviors are not simply a facade. Our behaviors don't just reflect what people have told us, you know, how we're supposed to act. But our behaviors really do come from a genuine place that are consistent and align, really set us up for relational success. So that's kind of what this whole book is about.
Yeah. And do you think part of the problem is that we've been told basically to not even acknowledge our emotions? I mean, like you said, you know, it doesn't matter what you're feeling as long as you can present a front to the world that at least looks normal or fits in with societal norms.
But the fact is,
we're like so jacked up with like all the problems that we have or the attitudes we have towards other people or the jealousies or the whatever that all of a sudden, eventually it's going to spill out, right?
Absolutely. That's what Jesus said. He said, you know, these behaviors, good and bad, they come from your heart. And if you haven't dealt with your heart, then you can spend the rest of your life trying to monitor or contain your behavior. And here's what I've noticed, Lisa. When people hit their 40s, it's the strangest thing. It's like everything they've tried to contain, everything they've tried to conceal, everything they've tried to hide suddenly comes gushing to the surface in people's early 40s. And they say to pastors and they say to counselors, I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know where this is coming from. Or they're saying that about their spouse. I don't know. Suddenly he or she is different. And then people begin digging around and discover, no, actually, I've been carrying this stuff for years and years and years, but I've behaved my way through it, and now I can't contain it anymore. So I just don't want people to wake up one day surprised by what's in their heart because it's absolutely unnecessary.
Yeah. So how can, for example, you know, we have 20-somethings that are listening to this who are like, well, I don't want that to be my story in my 40s. Yeah. So how can I even be aware of the emotions that are in me right now and the effect that they're having upon me so I'm not just excusing them away? What should I be doing?
Challenge with singleness. I got married when I was 30, so I was single a little bit longer than some people, but obviously not as long as others. But the problem with singleness is when we're single, we can almost completely control our environment. I can get a different roommate. I can get a different job. I can move in with my parents. I can move out. I can get different friends. So when people kind of raise up in us the things that we don't like about ourselves, instead of dealing with ourselves, we just go get some new people. We move. We leave. You know, we change jobs. We change boyfriends or girlfriends. So unfortunately, oftentimes it is marriage that forces people to deal with what's in their hearts, but it doesn't have to be that way. And your question is a really, really good question. What can people begin to do now that, you know, prepares them to be successful relationally by dealing with their heart? And here's what I would love for your audience to hear. You will never be, for your single audience, I would say, you will never be less motivated, but neither will you have a greater opportunity than right now than to deal with what's in your heart. You'll never be less motivated because you're not motivated. You're single, and you can control your environment. So it's not very motivating when you're single to deal with this stuff, but it'll never be easier because once you get locked into a relationship with someone you love or want to spend the rest of your life with, and I don't mean locked in a negative way, I mean you're committed, you're in, then it just becomes so much more difficult to deal with root issues and heart issues. So this is the time to begin to deal with this stuff.
Yeah. Okay, well, you talk when you're actually outlining, and like I said, the title of the book refers to them as enemies, and you list four, basically guilt, anger, greed, and jealousy. And yeah. You actually define them in terms of owing someone. Can you explain that for us?
Yeah, guilt, anger, greed, and jealousy, the four enemies of the heart. And the best way to understand these, as I've discussed these, and the best way to give people a handle on both recognizing these and dealing with them is to think of them in terms of a debt or debtor relationship. And I'll define that. For example, guilt says, I owe you. I've done something wrong, and now I feel bad when I'm with you. I owe you. Anger says, you owe me. You've done something to me, so you owe me an apology. You owe me restitution. You owe me. Greed says, I owe me. And greed is a tough one because greed, nobody sees greed in the mirror. You know, we see greed in other people. You'll never meet someone who says, you know, my problem is I'm just greedy. But greed says that everything that gets placed in my hands belongs to me and is for me. I owe me. And then jealousy, which is a powerful, powerful emotion. Jealousy says God owes me. The reason I can't, you know, the reason I'm not a size 2 is God made my body this way. The reason I don't have better relational skills, God put me in a bad family. The reason I have physical issues is because God didn't give me a healthier body. So jealousy says, ultimately, God owes me. So as people begin to think in terms of I owe you, you owe me, I owe me, God owes me, suddenly I can begin to make some progress with these challenging emotions because I see them for what they are.
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean, it's just kind of like hard to take, though, because we think to ourselves, my goodness, are all of those, I mean, this is a little bit of a rhetorical question, but, you know, certainly people in the church don't have to deal with these. Or haven't we already dealt with, you know, or haven't we already addressed this somehow? Or how, when you become a believer, you know, shouldn't this become easier? But it is so true. I mean, I can just look at these, you know, myself and say, oh, yeah, okay, this one crops up. This one crops up in this situation, you know. So really, I mean, is there a way to even guard our hearts from these?
Yeah. In fact, the entire book, Enemies of the Heart, I wrote this book to give people some tools to begin recognizing, first of all, and then to begin dealing with these things ultimately. And unfortunately, we don't see guilt, anger, greed, and jealousy when we're alone. Guilt, anger, greed, and jealousy really only surface within the context of relationships. But our tendency is to blame the people we're in relationship with, the single people. We just change relationships. Married people with children, it's not so easy. But the great thing about being in your 20s or early 30s and being single is as you begin to experience the sense of guilt, anger, greed, and jealousy, to begin looking in the mirror and deciding, you know what, I'm not going to abandon the environments that surface this stuff in me. I'm going to thank God for these environments, and I'm going to learn to deal with this stuff as it surfaces in me. Now, the four antidotes for these four things, this is not new information, at least three of the four isn't. The solution for guilt is to confess. In fact, I have a whole section in the book about what is biblical confession, and it's not, you know, in churches, we're taught to tell God we've sinned, but that's not biblical confession. Biblical confession is confessing to people that we've sinned. Of course, the Catholic Church has made a science out of that, and that's not even necessarily a bad thing, but it doesn't take it the whole way. So learning how to confess biblically, it's what ultimately rids a person of guilt. Anger is the one we talk the most about because it's hard to hide anger, and you know, the solution to anger is forgiveness. The solution to greed is to give. But here's the one that people, they look at me surprised when I talk about, and that's the issue of jealousy, the idea that somehow God owes me. The only way to deal with jealousy, the only way, and again, it's so nasty to admit we're jealous because it seems so middle school and so petty, but all of us deal with jealousy, all of us do. And the solution to jealousy is to develop a habit, and these are habits of the heart, is to develop a habit of celebration, of public celebration, of saying to that person that, you know, bugs you in the office because she looks so good and she can wear skinny jeans and she can, you know, whatever, is forcing ourselves to publicly celebrate the people that we are privately jealous of, whether it's the person that makes more money, the person that has a nicer car, the person that has the better job, whatever it is. Learning to celebrate other people's success.
Huh. So have you seen, I'm assuming that you've had people, you know, pockets within North Point or elsewhere start putting this into practice, and what have you seen change?
Well, people's countenance changes.
Mm-hmm.
Again, anger is the easiest thing. People with anger problems eventually get to the place where they can say, okay, I have an anger problem. And it's pretty easy to trace who they need to forgive. That's the easier of the four. But when it comes to guilt being willing to go back and acknowledge who do I need to pay back, who do I need to confess to, that's tricky. Greed is tricky because we're not naturally generous people. And then again, this whole issue of jealousy, you know, who is it ultimately facing the fact that I'm really mad at God? Mm-hmm. I'm not mad at my brother-in-law for being richer than me. I'm not mad at my sister-in-law for being skinnier than me. I'm not really mad at them. I'm really angry with God that God didn't give me a better background, a better body, a better opportunity, or whatever it might be. As people are able to get a focus on what's causing and creating these issues in their heart, they're able to make progress. But until then, it's just angst. You know, we just strive. We just carry this stuff around. And that's not God's plan for us. But it takes some work to do. It doesn't come natural. And as you said earlier, Lisa, you know, the assumption sometimes I think in church is that, hey, once you become a Christian, these things go away. The Bible does not teach that. Mm-hmm. The Bible gives us, you know, tells us, hey, you got to renew your mind. It's a process. You have to confess. You have to forgive. You have to be generous. And you got to celebrate. And these are disciplines. These are habits. But the people that develop these as the habits of their lives eventually clean all that junk out of their heart, and they're able to be so much more successful relationally.
Yeah. I think it's so true, too, how we, you alluded to this a little bit, how because we're so busy focusing on what we don't have, we don't recognize what we do have. And I know, yeah, I've put that into practice a little bit myself, because a lot of times I'll think to myself, you know, man, you know, I woke up one day and I was 30 and I thought I would be married and I wasn't. And how come that didn't happen for me? And that isn't part of my story yet. But at the same time, I think to myself, had I gotten married then, and had that been my story now, and I had a bunch of kids or whatever, I would not be involved with Boundless probably. I probably still wouldn't be here at Focus. I wouldn't have this opportunity to go to Europe once in a while like I do, you know. And it's looking at the things that God has used in my life and been able to use the talents and gifts that I have for where I am right now, and to be excited about that for myself and not worry about what I don't have that friends do have that really I would like, but maybe that's for a different season, you know. Doesn't mean I won't get it someday or whatever, but to be content, I guess, where I am and excited about what may be in the future.
Yep. And that's, again, the way you got there is you had to renew your mind to that. It's not natural to have that perspective. You learned that. That didn't happen the moment you became a Christian. And right. So that's the point. Is I think as we learn, as we grow, as we're discipled, you know, we renew our mind, which changes our heart, which impacts our behavior, and ultimately we're better people.
Yeah. And I usually only have that good attitude on Tuesdays and Thursdays. The rest of the week, it's just, who knows? There's no guarantees, you know? Yeah. No, that's good. So,
Lisa, I mentioned part of what drove me to write this book was some things I learned with my kids. When my kids were very, very young, like little, I would go in at night, put them to bed, and I would put my hand on their heart, and I would begin to ask them, is everything okay in your heart? Is everything okay in your heart? And, of course, that question didn't make sense to them. So then I began to say, are you mad at anybody? Did anybody hurt your feelings today? Have you had secrets? Do you have a secret that you hope no one finds out about? I just began to ask them these questions. Over time, they learned to monitor their hearts. And now that they're teenagers, it's kind of a joke. I'll go in at night and they're going to bed and I'll say, hey, Allie, is everything okay in your heart? Andrew, is everything okay in your heart? And I just wanted them to know this is something you learn to do. And you don't have to carry junk. And now I'll say, hey, is everything okay in your heart? And Andrew will say, yes, I'm not mad at anybody. Nobody hurt my feelings. He'll kind of go through the whole list of questions. But I'm thinking, I'm glad they've learned that these are things you've got to pay attention to, or you end up carrying things around that you have no business carrying around. So I would just say to your audience today, as they listen to this and as we wrap up our conversation, hey, is everything okay in your heart? Is everything okay in your heart? Are you mad at anybody? Did anybody hurt your feelings? Here's one for us adults. Do you have imaginary conversations with the same people over and over and over? If so, those are heart issues, and those are things God wants to help you heal.
Yeah, and they are just such a colossal waste of time. I mean, that's just what I think of when I think of all the things that we could be excited about and engaged in, and things that we could be learning about ourselves. And I mean, if there's one thing that, you know, 20-something singles that we have time to do, I mean, I think of myself and my girlfriends. I'm like, we sit around and talk all the time about stuff, about our hopes and our dreams and what we want. And to be, you know, that's why I love the way you said, you know, with the book, how we can break free from the destructive power of this stuff. Because really, I mean, to be bogged down by this is exhausting. And like you said on the front end, no one wants to show up at 42, 43 years old and realize I didn't deal with any of this on the front end. And now I just, you know, now I've got to use middle age really to deal with all this junk and try to reclaim something. So, Well, cool. The book is Enemies of the Heart. We've been talking to Andy Stanley. Definitely just a great jump start, I think, to handling some of this stuff and dealing with it, like Andy said, really bringing it before the Lord first and foremost and recognizing, which probably in hearing this, y'all have already identified which one or two of these is probably your main issue at this point. So thank you so much, Andy, for just shedding some light on this. And I think it'll be a great opportunity for folks to kind of delve into this further on their own.
Thank you so much, Lisa.